of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 18th. The first order of business is approval of the minutes from the April 16th meeting. Representative Clark moves approval of the April 16th meeting minutes. Is there any corrections, changes, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. So, members, first of all, we're going to be doing a walkthrough and taking some public testimony on House File 4289 today, the Delete All Amendment. I've spoken with Representative Mahoney to give him sort of a rough template for how I envision the rest of the week going out. Is today we'll do the walkthrough, take public testimony. In the event that we still have additional public testimony, I would suggest that people email the chair. We can forward that to members of the committee, or we may have public testimony tomorrow as well. The deadline for amendments to the bill will be a soft target of about 2 p.m. tomorrow. The important thing to me is that, number one, that the DFL has always been fair with me when I was in the minority to give chance to read the bill and offer amendments. We want to give time for the opportunity for members of both sides to offer amendments. But I also don't want to keep our nonpartisan staff here until midnight tonight working on amendments. So in the event that we have some stuff that's getting finalized up before the 2 p.m. deadline, view that as a soft deadline, and of course the chair can always waive the 24-hour rule for amendments at his discretion. So then, again, there may be public testimony tomorrow. Friday, I envision then having markup and passage of the omnibus bill. Also, for members to know, when you see the agenda for the for bills on Friday, you'll notice there'll be two bills on the agenda. The first is going to be House File 4289. That's the omnibus bill. We were also going to see Representative O'Neill's bill following that, the Xcel nuclear power provisions. The plan is, as I understand it right now, if Representative O'Neill or another member chooses to, that there will be an amendment offered to the omnibus bill that will contain the substance of that package of issues. In the event that that amendment does pass on the omnibus bill, it is successfully amended on the omnibus bill, the plan would be that identical language would then be offered to the O'Neill bill and voted on, where I presume it would be the same substance and the same action by the committee would be taking place. In the event that the committee does not successfully adopt that amendment, then there would be no need to take up the second bill on the agenda. So when you look at the Friday agenda and you see those two bills, that's sort of that's the plan that the committee is looking forward to. So with that, Representative Mahoney, do you have any questions for me at all?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to assume that we've heard all bills that refer to everything that's in your omnibus bill at this particular point, or if we haven't, you're going to explain them a little bit more in depth.
So, Representative Mahoney, in the event that this bill, there will be provisions in there where this is not going to be the second hearing, it'll be the first hearing for those provisions, so that will give members of the public the opportunity to weigh in on it, members to ask questions. But there are some provisions that will be the first hearing of those provisions, whether it's appropriation or policy. Representative Mahoney.
Well, that might slow the process down because there's some things in here that I saw that are first time I saw them. So I might have some questions about that.
And that's entirely appropriate. Again, the plan is that right now we're going to do walkthrough, take member questions, take some public testimony today, and then if need be, then we'll take public testimony as well tomorrow, and then Friday would be dedicated to amendments as well as markup. So, Representative Mahoney.
And just so we're clear, any amendments have to be to you sometime 2-3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, correct?
Yeah, so 2 o'clock is a soft deadline, but if you have the concepts to staff and they're working through them, just be in communication with us, and as always, you get the chair has the discretion to waive the 24-hour rule, but I think we have enough time built into the calendar to allow for this. But if there's problems, just be in communication. The primary concern, Representative Mahoney, is again, I don't want to make our nonpartisan staff stay unnecessarily late tonight or come in unnecessarily early tomorrow. If we can just be flexible on the majority
side,
Representative
Mahoney. Chair, having read about half of the bill, I'm not going to get. I've already found a number of poison pills in here, so I'm not overly concerned about the first bill. It's the second one that's coming later in May that I'll be more concerned with.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. At this point, what we'll do is we'll start with Mr. Zempel from our nonpartisan research. He'll do a brief overview of the spreadsheet that is in members' packets. What I would hope we would do then is allow Mr. Zempel to finish the spreadsheet. We'll ask allow member questions at that time, and then we'll move on with Ms. Shaleen, Mr. Weeks, and Mr. Eloff to cover the policy provisions of the omnibus bill. Mr. Zempel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Chris Zempel, House Fiscal Analysis Department. In front of you should be the spreadsheet for the omnibus bill. On the front of the spreadsheet are the agency totals and fund totals impacted by the bill. On the back of the sheet are the individual change items. Running through the front of the sheet, starting on line 3, we have an additional $9,370,000 to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, an additional $1,500,000 to the Housing Finance Agency, $200,000 to the Department of Labor and Industry, and $3.55 million to the Public Facilities Authority, for a total of $14.62 million in additional funding in FY19. Additionally, we have $27,700,000 down on line 30 for the renewable out of the renewable development account in fiscal year 19. Moving to the second page of the spreadsheet, on line 37, from House File 3527, we have $15 million in fiscal year 2019 for the border-to-border broadband program. On line 38, we have a reduction to the Minnesota Investment Fund of $5 million in fiscal 19 and $3 million in fiscal 21. On line 39, we have a reduction to the Job Creation Fund of $7 million in fiscal 19 and $3 million in fiscal 21. Line 40, Child Care Business Startups, House File 1410, $750,000 in fiscal 19. Next, we have Advocating Change Together Grant, House File 3933, $50,000 each year starting in fiscal 19, 20, and 21. Project Build Minnesota, House File 3810, $400,000 in fiscal 19. Cambridge Redevelopment, $1.5 million in fiscal 19. Centers for Independent Living Veterans Grant, House File 3009, $590,000 in fiscal 19. Cook County Higher Education Grant, House File 2853, $150,000 in fiscal 19. Greater Minnesota BDPI, $900,000 in fiscal 19. That was House File 3714. Logistics Specialties, Inc. Grant, House File 4377, $250,000 in fiscal 19. Job Training Grants, House File 1018, $500,000 in fiscal 19. The Ambassador's Grant, House File 1591, $250,000 in fiscal 19. Economically Depressed City Grant, House File 4145, $230,000 in fiscal 19.
And Mr. Zempel, just really quick, I think Representative Fabian won. Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I didn't need to be recognized now, but I did have a question on line 50 with regards to the grant, and I see it's House File 4145, authored by Representative Hansen. I don't believe, and I have missed a meeting or so, I don't believe that's been heard in committee either. Is that correct?
Representative, we'll come back to you if you want at the end of this, but that is correct. There are some provisions in this bill that this will be the first hearing on the bill, not the second hearing on it.
And I understand that, but I just wanted to point out that Representative Hansen and the Environment Committee has been fairly outspoken about Dark of the Night and things just magically showing up and so forth in the bill. So I'm not sure he'd appreciate this, but maybe we'll find out.
Oh, maybe we'll have to summon him to the committee and find out, huh? Mr. Zempel, that's a very good point, Representative Fabian. I didn't consider that. So Mr. Zempel, if you could continue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, On line 51, we have the CLUES Education and Technology Grant, House File 4147, $500,000 in Fiscal 19. MESRD, House File 3065, $300,000 in Fiscal 19. The next four provisions are MIF carve-outs. We have $500,000 for the Duluth Paper Mill, $2 million for Highway 61, House File 3751, $500,000 for Mille Lacs, and $500,000 for a lactic acid production grant, House File 3713. On line 59, we have a statutory carve-out from the Dislocated Worker Fund for St. Cloud, House File 4342. The next two are from the Renewable Development account on line 61, Natural Resources Research Institute, House File 3988, $600,000 in Fiscal 19, and Prairie Island Net Zero Incentive Grants, $20 million in Fiscal 19, $5 million in Fiscal 20, and $5 million in Fiscal 21. Starting on line 65, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, Homework Starts with Home, House File 1392, $1 million in Fiscal 19. Manufactured Home Park Improvement Grants, House File 876, $500,000 in Fiscal 19. Starting on line 73, we have the Department of Commerce, and each of these are from the Renewable Development account. So line 73, Biomass Grant Program, House File 4424, $1.1 million in Fiscal 19. Emerald Ash Borer Removal Grant, House File 3749, $3 million in Fiscal 19. Transportation Study, $2 million in Fiscal 19. And Healthcare Energy Storage Systems, House File 3113, $1 million in Fiscal 19. On line 80, we have the Department of Labor and Industry, General Fund Appropriation, $200,000 in Fiscal 19. And a Workforce Development Fund Appropriation, Youth Skills Training Grant, House File 4095, $250,000 in Fiscal 2020 and 2021. Next, we have the Public Facilities Authority. On line 88, Deer River Wastewater. These are General Fund Appropriations. $750,000 in Fiscal 19. Alexandria Lake Area Sanitary District, House File 3519, $600,000 in Fiscal 19. Cold Spring Water Infrastructure, House File 568, $1.1 million in Fiscal 19. And Big Lake Sanitary District, House File 495, $1.1 million in Fiscal 19. The next section are revenue change items. We have the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund, House File 3285, the Housing Development Fund, $400,000 in Fiscal 2021. We have on line 98 for the Department of Labor and Industry, Occupational Safety and Health Administration Penalty Conformance, Workers' Compensation Fund, $100,000 in 2019, $100,000 in 2020, and 2021. And finally, on line 107 for the Department of Commerce for the Renewable Development account, $20 million cask fee cap, House File 4257, reduction of $12.5 million in Fiscal 19 and $14 million in Fiscal 20 and 21.
Any questions for Mr. Zempel or the Chair before we move on to policy? All right, so nonpartisan staff, I believe we'll start with Ms. Shaleen.
Anna Schilling, House Research. We're looking at Article 2, Employment and Economic Development. That begins on page 27. Section 1, Dislocated Worker Rapid Response Activity. This is House File 4342, heard April 11th in this committee. Setting aside up at least $650,000 of Dislocated Worker Fund money to activities in St. Cloud with a designated service provider. Section 2 is House File 3957, heard in this committee March 28th. and it allows local governments to use loan repayment funds in a federal, in a business revolving loan fund partially funded by the federal government, correcting some issues retroactively. Section 3 changes the Minnesota Investment Fund's name to the North Star Opportunity and Development Account. It's a revisor's instruction. This is not based on an introduced bill, but on the recommendations of the OLA report, because the current name created some ambiguities in the statutes. Energy article?
Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The energy article starts on page 28, and Section 1 concerns the renewable development account. The changes in the middle of page 28 are from Representative Barr's House File 4257, which sets a cap on the contribution Xcel Energy makes the renewable development account each year. The cap is set at $20 million rather than being tied to the number of casks containing nuclear waste at Monticello and Prairie Island. The rest of the changes made to Section 1 on the next several pages essentially flesh out the process, the decision-making process with respect to grant cycles held under that account. Changes on page 30 provide for cost recoveries for Xcel, and as I mentioned, other changes allow the decision-making process for grants to be set on paper. Previous, when this was not a state account before 2017, much of the way the decision-making process operated was left in the hands of Xcel Energy. This article or this section puts them in statute. Turning to page 33, section 2. Solar Energy Incentive Program. This is Xcel Energy Solar Rewards Incentive Program, and what it does is increase the eligibility of projects that can get financial assistance under that program from 20 to 40 kilowatts in capacity. On page 34, Section 3 establishes a Prairie Island Net Zero project and funds that project for the next 5 years from the Renewable Development Account to develop an energy system, renewable energy systems, Prairie Island Indian community to result in net zero emissions. At the top of page 35, Section 4 requires relocation of the Public Utility Commission's offices to Virginia, Minnesota. Section 5 is from Representative Rarick's House File 3243, which requires the Public Utilities Commission to allow public utilities to include certain employer contributions to employee pension funds in the utility's rate base. Section 6 in the middle of page 35 concerns disputes regarding net metering between cooperative electric associations and their members, and provides that those disputes, last session's bill allowed cooperatives to pass a set of rules that allowed those disputes to be adjudicated internally in the co-op. If the co-op does not take advantage of that, this section provides that those disputes will be resolved by the Public Utilities Commission. Turning to page 36, Section 7, this is the first of a number of sections relating that come from Representative West's House File 4394, regarding information on labor and renewable energy projects. We'll be talking about that several times in the next few pages. Section 8 in the middle of page 36 provides that for Xcel Energy, its current solar energy standard requires at least 10% of that standard to be met by smaller projects, and the language in the middle of page 36 increases the capacity of those projects from 20 to 40 kilowatts. Section 9 at the bottom of page 37 is again from Representative West's 4394, and it requires for renewable energy projects that are contributing to a utility's renewable energy standard that those utilities issue a quarterly report to the commission speaking about the items on page 38, which is looking at essentially how much of the employment was done by Minnesota residents or people who live within 150 miles of the facility. Section 10 at the bottom of page 38 is also from Representative West's bill, and that provides that the current statute provides, or the current section says that the Public Utilities Commission shall implement the Renewable Energy Standard to maximize a set of various conditions, and this adds to those conditions the creation of high-quality employment opportunities for Minnesota workers. At the top of page 39, section 11, another section of Representative West's bill provides that in determining whether a certificate of need should be issued for a large energy facility to be constructed in the state, the Public Utility Commission should evaluate, and the language is actually on page 40, again, whether the applicant has demonstrated that at least 50% of the hours of constructing of those facilities was performed by Minnesota residents. Section 12 in the middle of page 40 also requires for projects that have obtained a certificate of need, after the project is completed, it requires reporting on those employment statistics to the commission. Section 13 on page 41 is a list of exemptions for projects that don't require a certificate of need. And on page 42 at the top, there are the language says that large wind energy conversion systems or solar energy generating systems that are 5 megawatts or more in capacity do not need to obtain a certificate of need, including those systems that are engaged in repowering projects. Beginning on the bottom of page 42, section 14 is from House File 917 from Representative Keel. It establishes a grant program for certain residential biomass heating systems that would pay up to 33% of the cost of installation and purchase of those systems with a cap of $5,000. Section 15, beginning on the bottom of page 43, is Representative Mahoney's House File 3749, which sets up a grant program for St. Paul District Heating System to process trees that are removed because of emerald ash borer in the service area here, and that extends to the top of page 45. Section 16, with respect to large electric facilities seeking site permits, there's a standard review process that allows the decision is supposed to be made within 1 year by the Public Utilities Commission. Current statutes allows that time period to be extended by for up to 3 months. This language allows that extension to be for 30 days only. Section 17 on page 45 is from Representative Shoemaker, which allows the relevant language is at the top of page 46. High voltage transmission lines in excess of 200 kilovolts that have obtained voluntary easements from all landowners located along the right of way. Those projects are allowed to participate in a review process for a site permit, a route permit in this case, since it's a high voltage transmission line, that is essentially a less burdensome process than the regular process. Section 18, again, extends or reduces the amount of time the Public Utilities Commission can extend a decision on a large electric facility, this time from the alternative review process. Section 19, in the middle of page 46, adds to the definition of a large wind energy conversion system the transmission lines that are directly associated with that system that are necessary to interconnect it with the transmission system. Section 20 on page 46, and 21 on page 47, correct just the names of some accounts that were incorrectly set in last year's bill. And finally, on page 48, in the middle of the page, is a repealer that repeals the wind mandate for Xcel Energy, which I believe was completed in 2002. That completes the energy section, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from members for the Mr. Eloff or for the chair? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it was back. Let me find the page here. At one point, when talking about the wind energy construction, you had one boundary of 150 miles, and then you had another boundary of 100 miles. I'm wondering if there's a purpose to the two distances or two different bills.
Representative Honey, can you refer me to a page and line number?
Well, the one I was able to mark quickly enough is on page 40, starting on, I think it's line 9. And let me, while you're looking at that, yeah, so that the other one is on page 36, line 10, line 11.
Representative Mahoney, so I can cut to the chase on this. This comes from Representative Westbill, and my understanding is that he and stakeholders are in have reached agreement on some different language, and those sections are going to be deleted and replaced with some reporting language, is my understanding. Representative West, is that correct?
That is correct.
Representative Mahoney.
I'll wait for the correction.
Thank you. Any other questions for the chair? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for Mr. Eloff. Going back to page 28, the first part of Article 3 on the renewable development account, is there anything in here that says with the reduction in the amount that Xcel pays into that account that they must use it for ratepayer decreases in their rates, or is that supposed to be read between the lines? Or
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, you're saying because of the reduction in their contribution,
yes,
is the amount of savings, so-called, the bill's silent on that.
Thank you.
And Representative Scott, my understanding, and we could maybe take public testimony on this later, is that they're only authorized to, on the fuel and tax clause of the bills, they're only authorized to collect what is specified here, so they would not be able to go out and collect more than was specified in statute for that portion of the fuel and tax clause. But we can address that later. Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, I marked a couple of these as to ask the question, did we hear them? Did we hear Representative Barr's cast reduction costs, fees?
Representative Mahoney, this is the first bill hearing we're having on that. Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Then on page 34, the Prairie Island Net Zero Project, did we hear anything about that before today?
Again, this will be the first hearing that you're having on that proposal.
And then, Mr. Chair, on page 35, line 3, the Public Utilities Commission being moved to Virginia, Minnesota. Did we hear anything about that?
We had extensive hearings on that, Representative Mahoney. No, we did. This is the first hearing on that proposal as well.
And Mr. Chair, my question, because of that, the reason I'm asking that is those are three bills that would very likely take up at least one, if not two or three hearings normally. Were you able to contact any of the advocacy groups about that and give them notice more than just at lunchtime today?
Representative Mahoney, I did have extensive conversations with Senator Tomasoni and Representative Mezza about the Virginia provision, so they are aware of that. With regard to the Prairie Island Net Zero Project, I think you'll be hearing from the tribal community today when we take public testimony. And regarding the cask storage cap limitation, that is something that we had extensive conversations on last year. And it's very similar to proposals we heard last year. But again, we're having 3 days of hearings on that, so it will be well vetted and discussed by members. The biggest change is that instead of it being a per cask payment, it's now just going to be an annual assessment. But again, we have 3 days of hearings on on this and any other provisions that are in the bill. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the last one I think I'm finding, well, there's a couple more. Were there hearings on the, on page 45, line 16 to 17, you changed the 3 months to 30 days. And then again on the high voltage transmission lines of 200 kilovolts, did we have any hearings on either of those?
Representative Mahoney, my recollection, and I could stand to be corrected, is those were contained in last year's omnibus bill. Or a little birdie is telling me that one was and one wasn't. But in the event that there was not a... then we're going to have 3 days of hearings on this, so this will be the first hearing on those items.
Well, Mr. Chair, it is your committee, and you get to run the committee you choose to. I will tell you that I understand sometimes small items, but you've put pretty large items in here without time for our custom and usage of hearings, so to speak, although a committee is not bound by that. That's a little bit unusual, not out of the ordinary for Garofalo's omnibus bills and their history, but the infamous history. But again, it makes it difficult for the public to be heard, and that's really one of the issues that we try to do up here. We all like transparency. I just wish you had used more of it in this bill.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius?
Yes. I'm looking.
Representative Wagenius, if you could pull the microphone closer to you.
I'm looking at the rider language. Can we go back to that?
Sure. Which page and which?
Nine. Rider language on page nine. I'm looking at $2 million appropriated from the renewable development account. And one is $1 million for the most rapid, safe, and economical method to move spent nuclear fuel. And the other is preparation of applications by independent private party. I am not recalling a bill. Am I missing something here?
No, it's correct. Again, this is the first hearing on those provisions, Representative Wagenius. What has happened is... there is a specific order for when the permanent spent fuel is going to get migrated. There's a specific order of plants that are going to be proposed. However, there is now a proposal for an interim facility in the Carlsbad, New Mexico area, which does not have a specified order. This is new recent information. So what this does is it's an opportunity for us to move the Prairie Island and Monticello plants. We're looking at getting those to the front of the line so we can get that spent fuel shipped out of Minnesota and shipped to potentially an interim site down in New Mexico. It's still new, it's still developing, but in previous discussions this committee has had, there has been no pro-constituency group for keeping the spent fuel in Minnesota. So this gives us an opportunity by several years to accelerate the migration of those resources out of the state of Minnesota. Seeing no additional questions or comments from members of the committee, we'll move on to the next article. Article 3 or 4? 4. Article 4, starting on page 48. And Ms. Shalene.
Anna Shalene, House Research. Article 4 on page 48, Section 1, Rules Impacting Residential Construction and Remodeling. This is based on House File 3044, as amended in our committee on March 28th, requires legislative review and approval of proposed administrative rules that would increase the cost of residential construction or remodeling by $1,000 or more per unit. Section 2 on page 49 and Section 5 on page 50 are both House File 3807, heard in our committee on April 13th, and they make changes to the license fees for manufactured home installers. Section 3 on page 49 and Section 4 on page 50 are House File 3284, heard in our committee on April 13th, and they define modular home and allow them to be placed on manufactured home parks. Sections 6 through 10 and section 30, which are pages 51 through 58 and on page 86, these are all parts of House File 3285 heard on April 13th. They're modifications to the manufactured home park closing provisions. Sections 11, starting on page 58 and running through page 84, that is sections 11 through 28, and then section 32 on page 87. These are all parts of House File 2112, as amended in our committee by the Delete Everything Amendment on April 11th. This text is all the same as that, except for technical revisions made by the reviser. Section 29, and they all change the allocation process for housing bonding. Section 29 on page 85 makes a transfer from the assigned risk plan. If there's an excess surplus in the assigned risk plan, it makes a transfer to the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund of up to $3 million, and this section expires once $3 million have been transferred into the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund. And the last section to cover is section 31 on page 87. This repeals the exception to the prohibition on rent control ordinances. Currently, statutory and home rule cities, towns, and counties can pass local rent control measures if they are allowed by special legislation and their measure is approved by a general election. This provision on section 32 removes that exception. For Article 5, I'd like to pass to Mr. Weeks.
Mr. Weeks, Article 5.
Mr. Chair and members, Ben Weeks, House Research. Beginning on Article page 87, Article 5, Section 1, together with Section 8, the repealer on page 92, are the two-tiered minimum wage proposal. That was from Representative McDonald's House File 4061, which was heard on Monday, the 16th. Section 2 through 7, which begin on page 91, are all OSHA federal compliance measures from the governor's supplemental budget recommendations. Specifically, sections 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 raise fines for certain violations of OSHA standards to comply with a recently finalized federal rule. And then Section 7 on page 92 indexes those fine amounts to inflation using the same mechanism that's used to index the Minnesota minimum wage to inflation. And that's the entirety of the Department of Labor and Industry article. Article 6 starts on page 92. It only has one section, and it deals with Lake Winona management, and specifically that section allows Alexandria Lake Area Sanitary District to perform certain lake management activities in both Lake Winona and Lake Agnes in order to comply with water quality standards for phosphorus and the total maximum daily load in Lake Winona, and that had a $600,000 one-time grant provided in the appropriations section, and that was from Representative Paul Anderson's House File 3519, as amended, that was heard last week on April 13th.
And, Mr. Weeks, if I could just take it from there. So, first of all, Representative Fabian, on that last section in Article 6, that's something we're going to have to sync up with the policy on, because I think that's more jurisdiction of your committee than ours. But we did hear it in our committee, and it was policy related to the appropriation. So you and I have to sync up. I can see what we're probably going to end up moving the policy out of this bill. That area, but we'll just, you and I can talk offline on it. Next, in Article 7, I've gotten some communications about this provision. The way this was communicated to me is that this bill still needs to be heard in at least one other committee. In the event that that bill is not heard in that committee, it will not be in the omnibus bill and it will be deleted tomorrow. So just that completes that. So I think that completes the, Mr. Weeks, your review. Questions or comments for the chair? All right. Representative Wagenius and then Mahoney.
I'm looking at page 5, and as you were talking about Lake Winona, I was thinking about what you were thinking about. You have money for grant to look, review.
Representative Wagenius, if you could just pull the mic a little bit closer to you, that'd be appreciated. Thank you.
On line 5.11, you have a grant to for review of water quality regulations and NPDES permits. That does seem to be something that also should be in the Environment Committee, and I was a little surprised to see it here.
And Representative Guinness, that was an error on my part. The thinking was to have them partner with PFA, but I did not make that change to the amendment. So, again, that'd be something that I'll address with Chair Fabian. And clearly, the language as it's written right now would be the jurisdiction of his committee. That was my mistake, though. I just did not give the proper instructions to staff. Representative Wagenius.
Well, it would be good to hear what it's supposed to do at some point, too.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had some questions about that, too, when I kind of wanted to know a little bit more about that. But I'm going to look on Article 7, fees, wireless facilities. You say it has to be heard in another committee. Are we going to hear about it in this committee before it goes into our omnibus bill?
Representative Mahoney, that was my kind way of saying that I think it's going to be taken out of the bill unless it is heard by committees. And then if it's heard by other committees, then this will be the first hearing on that bill these next 3 days. In the event that they don't hear it, there's not going to be any hearing. It'll be removed from the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions or comments from members of the committee, we'll move to some public testimony. First is Shelley Buck. Oh, I'm sorry, Karen, did you have something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just going to ask you, I guess Article 31 also was not heard as a bill. Is that right?
Say that again.
Article 31, repealing the one exception to prohibition of rent control, that was not heard either, right? Is that?
This is, again, the next 3 days will be the first hearing on that bill.
Mr. Chair.
Can I ask where that came from, Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me?
Can I ask you where that came from?
That came from the chair's bill on House File. I don't have the House number memorized. House File 4300, Representative. I just remembered that. House
Thank
File
you.
4300. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative May Quinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. It's on page 40. So 40.26, 27, and 28, it's about the reports for the local employment opportunities. So it says here that we'd have the full names and addresses of all Minnesota resident employees. Then if you go to page 41, under 41.10, all reports are public data. Is it our intent to publish the names and addresses of all of Minnesotans working in?
Representative Makeway, during the overview, this was covered that this language is going to be deleted from the bill. Representative West has been working on consensus language with stakeholders that will be addressed as part of an amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you. So first on the list, Tribal President from Prairie Island Indian Community, Shelley Buck. Representative Mahoney. You can come down, President Buck. So, Representative Mahoney.
I just have a bit of a question here. On page 73, and maybe I'm completely off base here, but we're talking about any time limitations on issues of bonds set forth. And this is with the Department of Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Is that our purview to deal with issues of bonds and how long they have? Or is that really, wouldn't that be underneath the bonding committee?
Representative Mahoney, that was part of Representative Knobloch's House File 2112, and I would have to look to make sure what committees that went through before it reached our committee. In the event that the chair of the Capital Investment Committee decided he wanted to see those provisions, then we would send it to him. But whether it cleared that committee before it got here or not, I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
My understanding is if it has... we should you should check if it has issues with bonding. Does it need a three? Is it nine? Supermajority, whatever it might be, well, pass your bill?
Representative Mahoney, I know we've had housing finance bonding provisions related to bonding before. We've not needed that requirement, but that's a good question that I'll make sure we'll research with staff. But I'm pretty sure it doesn't need to, but it's a good question to find out. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Shelley Buck. I'm president of the Prairie Island Indian Community, and thank you for allowing me to be here today. I'm here today to testify on behalf of our tribe in support of Article 3, Section 3 of House File 4289, which appropriates $40 million out of the Renewable Development Account over 5 years to help the Prairie Island Indian community become a net zero energy user, which would make Prairie Island one of the first net zero tribes and a national leader in renewable energy. Our tribe's reservation is situated 600 yards from Xcel Energy's Prairie Island nuclear power plant. We are the closest community to a nuclear plant anywhere in the country. Every day, we live with the consequences of our country's failed nuclear waste disposal policy. In 1994, we forcefully and vocally opposed legislation to give Xcel the right to store nuclear waste in dry casks adjacent to our community. Despite our strenuous opposition, this legislative authority for storage of the nuclear waste was enacted. By the end of 2018, there will be as many as 44 nuclear waste casks stored on a pad at the Prairie Island plant. The legislature in 1994 did not completely ignore the obvious concerns. For example, the 1994 legislation created a renewable development fund and provided that, and I quote, funds in the account can only be expended for development of renewable energy resources, end quote. This tied the intent of the fund to eliminating the dependence on nuclear energy and solving the nuclear problem for communities such as ours. As a result, Xcel currently pays $500,000 annually into the RDA for each nuclear waste cask stored on Prairie Island. The utility also pays $350,000, for each cask stored at its Monticello plant. In sum, Xcel has paid $327 million into the RDA. The Prairie Island Indian community has never received funds or benefited from the RDA, despite shouldering the risk associated with the storage of the spent nuclear fuel. We have watched as money from the account has gone to many purposes that have little or nothing to do with its original intent, the stimulation of renewable energy. We have raised our voices in opposition and disappointment at the rating of the fund, and we believe that the likelihood of that continuing is high unless there are strong renewable energy projects for the funds to go to as intended. Under the proposal before you, Prairie Island will embark on a nation-leading effort to become one of the first tribes in the country to become a net zero energy user. We will offset our total consumed energy with an equal amount of renewable energy generated through projects such as solar and programs that reduce and conserve energy in our homes, our businesses, and our buildings. To achieve this, we will partner with strong Minnesota companies, including Dakota Electric and Xcel Energy, as well as other entities and experts in the field of renewable and environmentally conscious energy. Proper stewardship of the land, waters, and air is a fundamental belief of our people, and we are excited about the potential to reduce our environmental impact through the bold, nation-leading proposal before you today. Padama Yayapi, thank you.
Thank you, President Buck, and I know I speak on behalf of the majority of the committee when I say that we are equally as excited. This is a really fantastic endeavor, and it's something that's going to be fun to watch over the next couple of years. As you said yourself, this is a nation-leading proposal for not only for the energy, but also for energy storage. And going forward, it's going to be very fun. It's exciting and bold to track the progress of this initiative. So thank you very much, President Buck. Next on the testifier list,
Chair,
Representative Mahoney, did you want us to? I wanted to get through some public testimony before we question people, but I guess we could. Do you want us to?
No, that's fine.
Okay, but I mean, President Buck, will you still be around? So if people want to ask questions later on?
Yeah, but I won't be around until midnight. Thank you.
Good answer. Thank you. Next is Jennifer Schellenberg. And Mike Mills, you're on deck. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Jennifer Schellenberg. I am a bartender at Northbound Brew Pub in South Minneapolis, and I'm the president of Restaurant Workers of America, a nonprofit that advocates for restaurant workers to protect and preserve their tipped income. Today I'm here representing thousands of servers and bartenders who have been fighting for a two-tier wage in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I want to thank you all for not only offering the full-service restaurant community an opportunity to speak on Monday, but I want to thank you for really, truly hearing us. Without a bill of this nature that acknowledges our tips as income, there's absolute certainty that jobs will be lost in my community, and tip culture, which we rely on as our main source of income, will be threatened. In the last 4 years, servers have received over 30% in wage increases. This has led to effects in our community. However, these are things that our community is not willing to speak out about. I can give you anecdotal references, but the reason that you don't hear about these references is because if my employer were to talk about decreases in back-of-house employment, he would look like a villain. One of the restaurants that I worked at in the last 4 years, when the wage got increased to $9.50, instead of decreasing any section sizes or increasing section sizes for servers or decreasing my hours in my schedule as I received a raise, we downsized our menu and we laid off three cooks. These are very real effects of raising the minimum wage for the highest earned paid people, for the highest paid people in the restaurant community. The questions that each of you raised on Monday were insightful as they related to the true impact of this change. You made deliberate efforts to look past narratives and to seek economic truth, and you confirmed to us that you respect both our stories and our preferred income source. The thousands of full-service restaurant workers who have been begging for true progress for our community, like this bill, are finally getting the recognition that we deserve. This tiered wage will ensure that the future of the Minnesota restaurant industry may continue to support tip culture, that our businesses may continue to thrive and offer service to average Minnesotans at reasonable costs. The bill ensures that the tiered wage will not negatively impact those who do not make a substantial portion of their income in tips. And with the guaranteed wage that rises with inflation, this bill means that in the future, the restaurant workers of Minnesota will not be left behind. Most importantly, this bill is a step in the right direction towards bringing equity to the back of house in the restaurant community instead of giving unnecessary pay increases to the tip workers in the front. I want to thank this committee again for looking at this issue with nuance, seeking truth, and doing what is truly progressive for my community moving forward. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Mike Mills, and then Mike Bull is on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm retired Sergeant First Class Mike Mills. I want to thank the committee for allowing us to talk last month about the bill to have a veterans liaison in every center for independent living. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your service, Sergeant.
You're welcome.
Next is Mike Bull. And Bruce Nelson is on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Bull. I'm the policy director for the Center for Energy and Environment. We're a clean energy nonprofit, primarily focused on innovation and energy efficiency. I'm also a member of the Renewable Development Fund Board for many years, and I wanted to come down and let you know that as a board member, I'm supportive of the changes that are to the Renewable Development Account in this package. I think it's a reasonable. It addresses a number of technical issues that were left over from last year, and also this project for the Prairie Island Indian community, I think, is a tremendous opportunity. And I've seen a lot of projects come through the RDA, or what was the RDF, This could be the best of the bunch, and I'm pretty excited, and I hope you will all support it.
Thank you. Bruce Nelson. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Nelson. I'm the executive director of the Alexandria Lake Area Sanitary District and have served in that capacity for 40 years. The district was the third sanitary district created in the state of Minnesota. It was back in 1971. Since the district was created in over 40 years, it has invested millions of dollars to clean and protect Lake Winona and downstream lakes like Lake Agnes. We've also sewered all of the 13 area lakes and nearby subdivisions over that period of time. The $600,000 state investment requested by the district will alleviate the immediate need for the district to spend $14 million on infrastructure upgrades, saving the state and local residents millions of dollars. And particularly, it will likely save the state $7 million that the district would otherwise receive through the Point Source Implementation Grant Program. I would also like to thank MPCA leadership and staff for its efforts to work with the district in this matter. The legislation will allow the district to achieve state water quality goals and meet permit requirements in an innovative, cost-effective permitting approach that will save money and improve the environment. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next on the list, I have Commissioner Hardy from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And after that, Karen Blackburn from Cook County Higher Ed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Shantara Hardy, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the House Omnibus Budget Bill. Governor Dayton proposed a supplemental budget that focuses on better government for all Minnesotans while protecting the state's financial future. With a budget surplus, we have an opportunity to make strong investments in our workforce, businesses, and communities. So this afternoon, I would like to just provide high-level feedback on the bill, specifically as it relates to programs at DEED. I will also send a more detailed letter this week to allow my team to have time to review the bill in detail. First, I just want to reiterate something that, Mr. Chair, you mentioned. Governor Dayton, his April 9th letter, requested that policy bills travel separately so that they can be discussed on their own merits and passed as a standalone bill. I am hoping that the committee adheres to that request from the governor. With that, a few items I would like to discuss. First, I want to just thank you for your support of the $15 million in fiscal year 19 for the Border to Border broadband program. Since 2014, this grant program has invested a total of $85 million and has provided approximately 33,000 households, 5,000 businesses, and 300 community institutions access to broadband. While I am appreciative that the House included the funding, I am concerned that the $15 million proposed will not keep pace with the urgent needs identified in communities across the state. The recommendation in the House bill would only expand access to about 5,000 households, businesses, and community institutions statewide. The governor's budget recommended $30 million in fiscal year 19 for the program, which would expand to approximately 11,000 households, businesses, and community institutions. I encourage you, if funding is found, to increase the investment to meet the governor's level to ensure that Minnesota families can have access and Minnesota business are able to compete. The governor's budget recommended funding for a couple of organizations specifically focused on helping to expand, upgrade, and renovate their facilities. The Family Tree Partnership for $1.4 million, the Family Partnership for $1.4 million, Family Tree Clinic for $900,000, and Tubman Center for $383,000. I encourage you to include that language in the bill. Lastly, I just want to touch on the cuts to the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund. As you know, it is important that Minnesota has a fully funded complement of economic development tools to support job creation and business expansion throughout our state. Minnesota's incentive programs like MIF and JCF are already modest relative to programs in other states, yet they remain critical components for community and businesses to be able to play a key role in expansion and relocation decisions, especially in greater Minnesota. This bill cuts MIF by $5 million for fiscal year 19 and earmarks a further $3.5 million in fiscal year 19, leaving only $4 million on the bottom line to support business expansion and relocation in this state. Since 2001, MIF has provided funds to more than 102 businesses like DigiKey that came before this committee, helping them add approximately 9,000 quality jobs throughout the state, leveraging more than $1.5 billion in private investment. Additionally, the bill cuts the Job Creation Fund by $7 million for fiscal year 19, reducing the program to $1.5 million for fiscal year 19 and reducing the base to $8 million in fiscal year 20 and $5 million in fiscal year 21. The Job Creation Fund has provided more than 84 projects statewide since 2014, 43 in the Twin Cities and 41 in Greater Minnesota, creating 5,000 jobs and retaining 96 jobs, leveraging about $1 billion in investment. I must tell you today the Job Creation Fund is fully subscribed for fiscal year 18, with multiple awards actually being made this week and two others likely in May. So if you have any projects that you want to get in the pipeline, it's closed. Notable funds, funding awards that we've made this year to Stack Precision in Painesville, to L&M Radiator in Hibbing, to Stars Hollow Company in Cambridge, and the Midwest Drycast in Luverne. With the budget surplus, these critical resources should not be cut. Minnesota will be left in a very uncompetitive position. I want to believe that this committee supports a strong and innovative economy. I strongly recommend you reconsider these cuts. Additionally, it would be great to provide input on the new name of the Minnesota Investment Fund. In conclusion, I know that the committee has challenging work ahead and time is limited. With that, please know that DEET is committed to working with you to develop a budget that will strengthen Minnesota's economy. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. And with regards to the new name of the Minnesota Investment Fund, of course, I had numerous ideas before that one, which all made the cutting room floor. I think you should be thankful that's what the name of it is right now. But if you have suggestions on what, again, this was given to us as a recommendation that there's multiple Minnesota Investment Funds, so we should have a different name. If you have a suggestion, let us know.
Okay.
Regardless, look forward to working with you in the coming weeks ahead and coming to a successful end of session and addressing your concerns. So thanks for being before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Karen Blackburn and then Commissioner Tingelthal is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Karen Blackburn. I am the Executive Director of Cook County Higher Education, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all again. I just wanted to thank you all and Representative Eklund for including $150,000 for Cook County Higher Ed in your bill. We are continuing to do our important work with bringing our culinary school to Cook County and increasing our nursing education programming. I look forward to hearing more good news from you in the future. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you for your testimony. Commissioner Tingelthal and Ruby Lee is on deck. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mary Tingerthal. I'm Commissioner at the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I, too, will keep my comments brief today, and we will, once we've had a chance to look at the entire bill, submit a letter for detailed comments. First of all, we would like to thank the committee for including one additional year of funding for the Homework Starts with Home program that the committee was unable to provide to us last year during the appropriation year. We are concerned that that level of funding is below what has been requested by the governor, and we're fearful that it won't really allow us to expand the program outside of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Clay County as we had hoped to do with the larger amount of money. But we can talk more about that in the future. We have also appreciate the fact that this bill does include several provisions that we had requested together with the industry on the Manufactured Housing Trust Fund, and thank you for including those. This committee heard from me last week with regard to a fairly lengthy section of the bill, pages 58 through 84, which was introduced by Representative Knobloch, which would reform the way in which tax-exempt bonds are allocated for housing as well as other activities. As I shared then, we're comfortable with the five consensus items that were hammered out with a working group of housing professionals over last summer and fall, but there are two items that we're concerned about, and those would remove a set aside for home ownership and also circumvent an important federal decision-making process that we are required to do by federal law. So we have scheduled time with the author to talk through those concerns in more detail. We also have worked with the Department of Management and Budget and delivered a letter yesterday to the chairs with some technical concerns about this part of the bill. There are things that the sponsor of the bill are aware of, and we have spelled those out in more detail, so we'll be happy to include that with our overall letter. And with that, I will conclude my comments.
Thank you, Commissioner. And of course, if we don't have the funds available to expand Homework Starts with Home, we could always take it out of broadband. Just always a thought. So. Couldn't resist. Ruby Lee and Commissioner Peterson, you're on deck. Welcome to
handouts.
If you could give it to Nan, the page, and I'll review.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Pleasure to be here today. My name is Ruby Lee. I'm president of CLUS, Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio, which in English stands for Latino Communities United in Service. I just want to take a minute of your time to thank you for your inclusion of our request for a capital expansion of our current headquarters in the east side of St. Paul. Our $7.2 million capital project certainly is pretty much on the finish line, so your support and your inclusion of our request in your omnibus budget bill really will help us get to the finish line. Our projected goal is to break ground in June of this year, and your support will definitely help us get to meet that goal. So just want to thank you, appreciate the support, and I look forward to working and reporting back to you when the project is completed.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Commissioner Peterson and Commissioner Lumen's on deck. Is Commissioner Lumen here? Where? Oh, there she is right there. Okay, sorry. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed to testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Ken Peterson. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry, and thanks for the opportunity to appear before you and discuss some of our preliminary concerns with the bill. As with Commissioner Hardy and the others, we will send you a letter detailing our supports and our remarks on the bill and how we feel about it. One thing I would like, as Commissioner Hardy did, I'd also like to remind the committee that of the governor's letter earlier this month asking that policy bills be separated from the funding bills. And as I get through my testimony, I'll point out two of those that we think should be removed. But First of all, I wish to thank the committee for the continued confidence your committee has had in our shows through our bill, your increased appropriation to the youth skills training program to provide additional grants to businesses, resulting in more opportunities for Minnesota youth in high demand fields. This is a popular program. We've had a number of applications, and we hope to do more and allow young adults to see their young people to see futures in various industries that they don't see now. We also appreciate the increase in appropriation for wage theft enforcement. You increased their appropriation last year and this year. It will help us to end this, at least prevent more and more of this wage theft. So we appreciate that. We also support appreciate you putting in the OSHA penalties, making them consistent with the federal government's. So that way we lose, there's no possibility of us losing funding for our OSHA program. And we support both, including the fee cuts for manufactured home inspections, consistent with your cuts last year of $5.2 million, and your clarification of the definition of mobile homes, of modular homes. Two areas, though, there are several measures that we urge you to remove, both for procedural reasons, which I discussed earlier with the governor's bill, and for substantive reasons. The first is the repeal of the tip credit prohibition, the so-called two-tier policy. We don't believe that, as we discussed on Monday in testimony, we don't believe that cutting wages for anybody is going to help our economy. We believe that the present system works well with a growing and exciting restaurant industry. We do not believe that by reducing their wages with inflation that we'll be helping anybody. Number two is we are concerned about the requirement that building code changes for more than $1,000 be notified to the legislature. We agree that housing costs too much. We need to help out for low-income housing. We don't think that this bill does it. We're very interested in any other ways we can reduce the cost of housing for people. It just came out today that houses increase more and more, the cost increase more and more. So we're concerned about it. We don't think this bill does the trick for it, and we just think it's going to make things more cumbersome. With that, I'll conclude my remarks. Take any questions you have.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you all.
Next, Commissioner Luman. On deck, Dan Leary. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Luman, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this omnibus bill today. We do continue to review the bill, and as my colleagues have said, we'll provide additional information in a follow-up letter about specific items. Just want to touch base on three quick things. First, we are disappointed that the governor's budget recommendation of $500,000 assessment for the utility grid reliability was not included in this bill. This funding provides Minnesota a seat at the table in critical regional and national grid reliability conversations. This assessment is paid for by the utilities and will end on June 30th, 2018, without action by the legislature. Second issue is this bill identifies a number of new grant programs that we haven't had an opportunity to analyze the scope of these programs, how we ensure that we provide the appropriate oversight, and so there may be some fiscal impact to the agency that is not reflected in this bill. We hope to continue to work with you on those projects. And finally, as has been mentioned by others, there are some policy provisions in this bill that the Department of Commerce has testified about its concerns in the past. One of those pieces in this bill is the prepaid pension bill, and we have reached out to Representative Rarick and are working with stakeholders in order to try to address the department's concerns on that matter. So we hope to have some additional information for you as this bill and language continues to move forward. Thank you for the opportunity, and again, we'll be providing some additional information as we move forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. And then just in response to yourself as well as the other commissioners, there was the concern about policy being in this bill, and I will respond as I have previously, make the same offer to Governor Dayton that I have, that in 2013, with total Democrat control, there was a lot of policy included in the budget bills, and if we can just have one rescission bill that gets rid of all that policy, I will agree to drop all policy from this bill and carry it separately. So I make that offer once again. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, that bill in 2013 didn't have as much bad policy.
Ah! Nice rebuttal. Dan Leary. Dan Leary here? Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed to testimony. And then Laura Ziegler, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Dan Leary. I'm the Director of State Government Relations at T-Mobile. And I'm here to support legislation that would make it possible for the wireless carriers to offer better high-speed wireless broadband service across the state of Minnesota in an efficient and cost-effective manner. Wireless usage in the state and across the country has grown exponentially in recent years. Your constituents have become reliant on their mobile devices for far more than just phone calls. Data traffic flowing across wireless networks has increased 25 times since 2010, and we expect it to grow by fivefold by 2022. In addition to personal data, communities have increased their dependency on wireless networks for health and safety measures. In 2016, 260 million 911 calls were placed in the United States, 70% of which were made by wireless devices. Due to the demand, wireless carriers such as T-Mobile have been dramatically increasing the investment that we're making in our networks across the country. In Minnesota alone, we've increased our investment by 74% from 2016 to 2017, and we fully intend to continue improving our network in the state. This will include the highly anticipated 5G technology that we intend to employ both in urban and rural communities. In this last year, T-Mobile spent $8 billion in the FCC's most recent wireless spectrum auction to purchase what's known as 600 megahertz spectrum. This spectrum travels much farther than normal spectrum, and it will allow us to provide reliable wireless broadband to many more Minnesotans in smaller towns and rural areas across the state. However, there's a significant impediment that wireless carriers encounter when we are building out our networks. That impediment is exceptionally large application fees in a small number of jurisdictions. Often, a large portion of those fees that is charged to the wireless carriers goes to cover the costs of third-party consultants. Application fees in most Minnesota communities is very reasonable. For example, in Waverly, we pay just $137. In Maple Plain, we pay $1,500, and in St. Peter, we pay $3,000. However, there are a small number of communities that assess consultant fees, often in areas that need improved wireless service the most, that can range upwards of $15,000 to $20,000 for one application. These numbers are high enough to prevent T-Mobile and likely other carriers from being able to build out our networks in those areas. In addition, because the resources that we allocate are finite, when we must pay exceptionally high fees in one area, we are not able to build out and invest in other areas. Your neighbors to the south recognized this a few years back, and they did something about it. In 2013, Missouri passed a bill much like what you're considering here today, and in 2015, Iowa did the same. Our proposed legislation would limit third-party consultant fees to something that is reasonable and affordable, enabling wireless carriers to continue investing all over Minnesota. It is important to understand that this will not prevent jurisdictions from utilizing third-party consultants. We fully understand that many communities do not have the resources or expertise to evaluate wireless applications, and that many consultants help streamline these processes. However, some consultants add unnecessary assessments to applications, causing the fees passed on to the wireless carriers to skyrocket. It should be noted that this proposed legislation does not affect or alter small cell language, which was passed here last year. We would simply limit the application fees to install or replace a wireless facility on a new or existing structure to $3,000. That is all this legislation does. Minnesota deserves to have the best technology available and quality high-speed broadband wireless coverage throughout the state. This legislation will encourage wireless investment, promote economic growth, and prepare your communities for the next wave of wireless technology. Wireless customers in Minnesota, your constituents, are demanding high-speed wireless broadband technology. Now is the time to ensure that their needs are met, and I thank you for your time, and I urge you to include this legislation in your bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And as I stated earlier, my understanding is that this bill still does need to be heard in another committee in order for us to go forward, so I know those conversations are ongoing. So thank you very much for your testimony. Thanks for being here. And also thank you for your work on Representative O'Neill's small cell bill last year. That was obviously, with the looking hindsight now in the last year, we can see that was a big success. So thank you. Next, Laura Ziegler. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Ziegler with the League of Minnesota Cities. We are a statewide organization representing over 830 cities across the state. I am here in opposition to Article 7, which is on page 94 of your bill, which the previous testifier just addressed. I know that the counties have similar concerns. And I will keep my comments very brief, Mr. Chair, since you stated there's a strong likelihood that this could be removed and conversations will occur elsewhere. But if that's not the case, I would be more than happy to provide additional information to the committee. So in short, when a wireless carrier comes to a city wanting to install some of their larger antennas on a water tower or city-owned property, the city will utilize, in most cases, almost all cases, we maybe have one or two cities that have structural engineers on staff, they will utilize a third-party contractor, an outside engineering firm, to conduct whether or not that structure is sound, among other variables, to hold that equipment. And so sometimes, as the previous testifier stated, it's above that $3,000 mark, which is sort of arbitrary, but most of the time it is below that $3,000 mark. And so what would happen is if in those instances where they're applying and the study to assess whether or not that infrastructure can hold those antennas, that additional cost above that $3,000 cap would fall upon the city to pay for. So it's essentially a subsidy for the wireless providers as the bill is drafted. I'm here for any questions, but that's all for my comments today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Ms. Ziegler, is it fair to say that the opposition is not to the dollar amount, but the opposition is to the legislature specifying and taking away that local control of the amount?
Mr. Chair, yes, we are opposed to both the dollar amount and setting any dollar amount in law. We would like to recoup our actual costs.
So it's not a matter of, like, if we just change the number, you guys would be in favor. In case someone here thought this was easy. Those of us who live through small cell remember this, so thank you. Questions, comments from members of the committee? Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Ziegler, I'm looking at the language on 9410 to 9413, which is, I believe, the language you just referenced. And I must say, this is the first time I've seen this language. But it strikes me that the language on 9410 and 11 says you only get to pass along the actual costs incurred. Okay. But then the language on 9412 and 13 says, but you can only charge $3,000. I see those as contradictory, because if the actual costs incurred is above $3,000, then what do you do? How am I doing?
The testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're totally tracking.
It's a good day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That's the final list of those who signed up for testimony in advance. Are there any additional members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Dave Siegel. I'm Executive Director of Housing First Minnesota. Just here in support of the bill, I want to thank you and commend the committee. There are two major challenges that we've talked about repeatedly facing the housing industry and our home buyers and our ability to build homes at prices that folks can afford, and that's the regulatory burden and workforce pressure. Your omnibus bill here addresses both of those through the housing rulemaking oversight provision and the funding for Project Build Minnesota. These are very important steps from our perspective to addressing the housing issues that face all Minnesotans, and again, want to thank you for your support and urge your passage of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any additional members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill today? Seeing none, again, we will be available for public testimony tomorrow. If you wish to sign up in advance, please contact the committee administrator. In addition, if you prefer to submit written testimony instead of appearing before the committee, you can email myself or the committee administrator, and we will share those comments with members of the committee. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Mahoney. Oh, Representative Mahoney and then McGinnis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was wondering if the testifier from Prairie Island Indian Nation would top down?
Sure. President, I see President Buck is still here, and does she? It looks like she's moving forward, so I think the answer to the question is yes. If you could, just restate your name for the record before we go to Representative
Shelley Buck.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Buck, I actually am very grateful that we are finally doing something with the monies that are taken from the XL ratepayers for something to do in the XL ratepayers service area. And I'm grateful that finally, after something I had seen for many years, that you really got little to no benefit from the RDF other than an ability. Never mind. So my question really is, at what planning stage are you? You have the engineers and the architects working on this now, or is this moving forward? So that I have some base as, well, I'm not the lead on the energy, but one of the minority members, we have a kind of a track record of how fast or how far you're getting with this. Without looking up at the numbers, I think you have a five-year window with money. So I really want to see this happen. I just want to know what at what stage are you in the planning, or is this a kind of a portfolio that came together in the last week, 10 days, month, 3 months?
President Buck.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. We have plans. We don't have definite plans. We have been talking about different solar projects for years. Probably every time I was on council, we've talked about it. And we do, we've been working with Xcel Energy and Dakota Electric on getting actual pricing, what the approximate amount is going to cost to do all the different projects we want. We have projects from solar garden to solar canopy for our valet that will also help our valet time in getting the cars to the customers, because right now in the wintertime, since we continually have snow even in the spring, they waste time on getting the snow off, warming the cars up. If we have the canopy, that will help not only help us with renewable energy, but it will also help our valet get the cars to the customers sooner. So we've got a lot of different projects we're already working on with Dakota Electric and Xcel to see what it's going to cost. And we just hired a consulting firm that will do an analysis of all the property that we own and what they foresee being the best projects on which property.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no idea, and it doesn't sound like you have a real hard cost. I don't have any idea what it's going to cost. This is approximately $40 million. If it costs more than $40 million, is the tribal nation and the casino and all the personnel, are you committed to the extra $10 million or the extra $1 million that it may cost?
President Buck.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the $40 million, we estimate it was going to be between $35 and $40 million. That was with the help of Xcel Energy and Dakota Electric and some of the individuals that Dakota Electric referred us to. So the $35 to $40 million is what is estimated. If it goes over, it depends on how much more, but we're hoping to be able to plan out each project accordingly so that it stays within that $40 million.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I look forward to seeing the progress on this. This is a pretty exciting idea. It would be nice to be to include in your plan on how people could be, how it could be more scalable so you could do an actual full city. Although I don't know the population down there, I know you have an awful lot of people move through that area. So hopefully you keep that in mind as how you would scale this up or lower, upper. I'm trying to keep the cold from getting too deep into this conversation. Whether a smaller city or a larger city might be able to figure out how to do the scale that you did and move forward to that. So I think this is a good idea. I look forward to seeing it completed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 9.2,
there is money granted to the public utility that owns Prairie Island Nuclear Generation Plant. We have not heard from this public utility. Are you finished with that?
Yeah. Are you done with me?
No.
Oh, I don't think we're done with you, but I think we're done asking you questions.
Okay. I can leave now?
Yeah. Thank you, President Buck.
Thank you.
I was thinking we were done.
No, we are. Thank you. Representative Leganis, go ahead. You said page 9, line what?
Line 2, 9.2. There's $2 million going to Prairie Island Nuclear Generation, to the utility, for these two tasks. But we had not heard, as far as I know, from the utility, from Xcel, if they were requesting this money, and I would like to hear from them about their request and what their intention is.
Representative McGinnis, I think you meant line 9.20 then, right? Not 9.2?
Yes, you're okay, right. So, I'm sorry.
I was going to say 9.2 is your bill. So,
thank you.
Yes, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed to testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Leganis, thank you for the opportunity to discuss these provisions. Yes, we did ask.
Who are you, Chair? Sir? You need to.
Oh, Yes, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy.
Thank you.
We, in discussions with the chair, there was an opportunity to use some renewable development fund money for some things that would actually improve the situation at the plant in terms of removing fuel. I went back to our nuclear folks, and they came up with these two ideas. They already had these two ideas. So they covered two different things. The first is the transportation. So when the fuel leaves the plant, it's going to have to be transported either by truck or by train. There's going to have to be some technology and engineering involved in whether the casks that the fuel is currently in can be moved and how that would work and what the configuration would be on the transportation device. So there's a fair amount of work that needs to be done just in terms of how do we get these things ready to move. And that work is going to have to be done eventually, assuming that the fuel moves. The one reason to do that as quickly as possible, and understanding that quick in utility terms is, you know, a matter of some years, but to do that, one reason to sort of accelerate that process is because, as the chair mentioned, there is an opportunity for an interim storage site in New Mexico. There's actually another opportunity in the state of Texas, which are private companies that are working to receive NRC licenses, that is Nuclear Regulatory Commission licenses, to accept spent fuel. And so the second appropriation in here would be used for our company to work with those independent storage facilities that are seeking a license to make sure that our fuel would qualify and that our fuel would be able to be stored there. And that requires some work between our engineers and nuclear folks and the folks at that facility. So those are two things that we think are very realistic chances to move the fuel sooner than, you know, perhaps waiting for Yucca Mountain or something like that, waiting for the federal government essentially to live up to its obligations to take fuel. So this was an opportunity to take advantage of that. It's a relatively modest amount of money, but we think it will put us in a good position to take advantage of opportunities to move the fuel sooner.
Representative Guinness.
Well, I would agree it's a relatively modest amount of money, but it is not dedicated to renewables in any way. So we are taking money that was designated for renewables and saying, well, that's going to part of your general obligation in your operations. I'm assuming you have been planning to do something with the fuel, so it seems very inappropriate to me, and maybe that's one of the things we could discuss. But I am, this feels like a pie in the sky. We have had huge amounts of money spent
to look at Yucca Mountain, nobody could figure out even how we could transport, much less whether Yucca Mountain would be available. And so this modest amount of money, I don't know that it gets us. Where does it get us?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, well, I guess part of my answer is that, you know, if we don't do anything, then the fuel's probably never going to move. And so what I can tell you is that these facilities down in both New Mexico and Texas are investing significant amounts of money to achieve a license. So these are, you know, I don't think pie in the sky is the way I would describe them. These are very real things that private companies are willing to invest millions of dollars in developing, and we've been tracking that very closely, and so we think there's a very realistic possibility that these will open up. There is less political opposition. I won't say there's none, but there's less in these locations than we've encountered out at Yucca Mountain, and so that's going to be, we think, helpful. And I can certainly understand and respect the frustration and the impatience, because we've, as you say, we've gone around this for a very long time, since 1994. But we believe this is a real opportunity, and this was an opportunity to start taking advantage to get a leg up on that process.
Representative Lagunas.
Just to mention, there is a provision in the bill, starting on line 10.6, where we are obligated to come back annually and tell both the Commissioner of Commerce as well as the chairs of the two committees in the respective bodies what we're doing with the money and how it's coming and how much more we expect to spend, or if at some point we decide it's just not worth spending any more money, then we would return the money to the fund. And that's what's provided in those lines.
Representative Lagunas.
Well, I appreciate the reporting back. I am still concerned that we are using renewable money for general operating expenses rather than for renewables.
Representative, Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, I guess the response I would give, and, you know, similar to, I think, what Mr. Bull testified to, if you look back at the history of the Renewable Development Fund, it has been used for a lot of things that were not renewable energy. Mm-hmm. But the intention of the Renewable Development Fund was to try to relieve the state of the nuclear waste. And so while you're right, this is not, strictly speaking, a renewable project, it is a very substantial step, we believe, in an important thing to the tribe and to the community and to the state, which is to get the fuel someplace other than here.
Representative Lagunas. And just members, just to be aware about, I visited the site in Carlsbad, New Mexico, where they currently store low-level radioactive waste. It's not an exaggeration to say it's in the middle of nowhere. So this is not a pie in the sky. There's actually a facility there right now underground that they deal with some low-level waste. The spent nuclear fuel is going to be an entirely different process. I don't think it's going to be the same thing. The models I've seen are still in the concept phase, but there are people doing this. But I think it's important to note that I think all of us share the shared goal, and that is that no one wants this stuff here. And if there's a community that's more geologically stable, that has no groundwater, that we would be in favor of getting that, and when it starts moving it there, and when that starts happening, we want Prairie Island and Monticello to be at the top of the list, not as being laggards. So, Representative Lagunas.
Yes. One of the things you didn't talk about in your testimony is who owns these facilities right now, whose land is it on, what are the, if we're going to go down this route, what's the opposition going to be in those communities?
Mr. Adams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagunas, I know the name of the company that owns the New Mexico facility is called Holtec, I believe, H-O-L-T-E-C. They own that property. I don't know off the top of my head the name of the Texas company, but I will get that. I already owe you two answers from the other day, and so I will get back to you with those, and I will also get the name of the company that owns the Texas facility. I think there will be political opposition. Not that they've seen signs of it, but this is always a controversial subject. So I can't tell you what the nature of that will be. I, I'll make an effort to see if I can find out from the companies whether, you know, they have a sense of that or whether they've started to receive some of that, and I can perhaps give you a narrative response to your question.
Representative McGinnis?
I think if we are going this route, we should understand how speculative these companies are or how solid they are. Just there's a lot we need to understand.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is your question for Mr. Evans or not?
It is not.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Evans.
Thank you.
Okay. Sure. When we get you on the list, we'll bring him back up. So. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to say thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a good-looking bill, and when I was here 4 years ago, I wanted to especially thank you for the work and your consideration for broadband. I know where we're at on this is not always on the same thing, and I get it. But when I was here 4 years ago, you actually had a zero across the office of broadband. And I will tell you, I'm going to keep fighting for that office because I think Dana and the work that they're doing is a good job. They are efficient, and they're getting as much work out there as they can, and they're following up, and they have a lot of work to do. And I know, as Commissioner Hardy had said earlier, you know, we're at $85 million so far, and I want to continue that work, and it's got to be efficient. I know it's still a lot of money when we're talking about an individual hookup, but it's getting cheaper as we do this down the road. Wireless is becoming a new technology, as you heard, with more you know, fixed locations, and we need to get that figured out. This is going to be what the future looks like, too, but it's all got to be based on some fiber in the ground that's going to help it communicate. So I just want to say thank you on behalf of rural communities that we're taking this thing more seriously, and I know we could still always use more, but it's something that we appreciate that very much. I also want to say thank you for the child care grants, the bill that I carried, and I think that's going to do some really good work in rural Minnesota as well. And I wanted to see, is Commissioner Peterson still here? I think he might have left, but I wanted to challenge or ask him the question about the two-tiered minimum wage. And I wanted to thank Jennifer for coming down with the Workers of America, the Restaurant Workers of America. And I know I commented earlier this week about, you know, my position and how this movement of folks in my industry are speaking up on the future of full-service restaurants. And my challenge or my question to maybe Commissioner Peterson was going to be to also ask and respect that we have a meeting with the governor about their side of this issue, too. I don't know that they've ever had a meeting with the governor. I hope they would. I hope the governor would listen to what they have to say because I think their message is very powerful. So I just wanted to say that publicly, and I hope that that's something that we can line up in the future because I think it's a very important message that is sprouting and exploding quickly with their numbers, and I think their voice needs to be heard from the executive branch. So, again, Mr. Chairman, thank you on this bill.
Thank you. Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to echo Representative Baker's comments about broadband. I don't know if people realize in the audience here that that this committee has this is not a budget year, and yet with a little bit of surplus money that we had, this committee was given $15 million of new money, and the entirety of that money is allocated to border-to-border broadband. I am really pleased about that, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
For the work. But also, looking forward, and we're talking about technology, I also, you know, we brought in Natural Resource Research Institute. I think the committee is going to hear more from this organization. They're based out of Duluth, but they also have a renewable energy lab in Coleraine, which is in my district. And they're doing some great work on value-added use of our forest products. And there's $600,000 in here from the RDA for continuation of that work. And then I just need to give a shout-out because my little community of Deer River cannot expand and cannot accommodate any future housing or business expansion because of their wastewater issues. And I am really pleased to see a grant to help Deer River with that. They've been waiting for this for years and are much appreciative. So thank you.
Representative O'Neill and then Mahoney. And members, I know, I believe the DFL is caucusing at 5 as well, so we'll just be brief. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond to Representative Wagenius, her concerns about the host communities. And representing one of the host communities, I just want the committee to know how important it is to actually at some point move the spent fuel out. We've held it there for much longer than was ever anticipated. And I know for Monticello, they're happy to be able to have the nuclear power plant there. But, Chair, in your wisdom, I thank you for considering using the RDA money specifically to help the communities that have hosted these power plants for decades. For Monticello, there's only 12 years left of their licensure, and at that point, either they relicense, which is probably unlikely, or they have to begin the decommissioning process. So I just want to thank you, and on behalf of a host community, and you already heard directly from Prairie Island community that they are incredibly grateful. Thank you for your forward thinking of using that RDA money to actually help us to move the spent fuel out. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney and Mr. Evans, if you want to come up, I think Mr. Representative Mahoney had a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Evans, maybe you can correct me. I'm going to ask a question I don't know the answer to. What was the investment by Xcel Energy in Yucca Mountain?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, I don't know the answer to that question. I can't really speculate. I'm not sure that, you know, that we actually made financial contributions to that effort. It was the obligation of the federal government under the agreement to not reprocess fuel back in the 70s. The federal government agreed that they would take the fuel, and that agreement has not been honored, obviously, in all of that time. I will see what I can find out about that. I'm sure I can get you an answer to that question. I will say that, you know, since that time, we have sued the federal government on a frequent basis in order to recover the damages, and we have recovered and returned to our customers the damages that we suffer because of their failure to honor that agreement. So I'll have to find that out, and we'll let you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was actually where I was trying to go. The federal government made an agreement. I was under the impression that there was essentially a surcharge of some sort on the ratepayers in Xcel's area to fund Yucca Mountain. And you answered that you sued, and you alluded to the fact that you'd sued and gotten some money back. I was just wondering if we were ever going to get any money back for our for a failure of providing the services that were required, and we might have paid for it. But I would love to find out how much we got from that, and if we have, what rate we got back from
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me see if I can get you some kind of accounting of that and get you a sense of what the answer is.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative
Mani. Thank you, Mr. Evans. And if I might address your bill here, you've been getting some accolades from your colleagues here.
Save your good stuff for final passage on Friday. Though. Don't use your A material here, Representative Mahoney.
Well, it's just so much material. That's pretty hard. Mr. Chair, you brought a lot of bills in here that had not been heard. You put, I mean, at a first count, you put in a number of poison pills, and I've gotten to five, and I think there's six that I could find relatively easy. It would be nice to actually put a bill together, send it to the governor without having to have him veto it, so that we, you know, and he has very, very clearly stated that he does not need, he's not going to do a special session, and he doesn't need a jobs bill. So that pussycat on your shoulder might have to give you a lot more comfort when, fail to get a bill passed. So I certainly hope you take that into consideration as we move forward. I certainly hope that the five or six bills that we've heard that are in this bill that have not been heard get a whole lot better vetting so that we understand what you're going to do with that. So we have a long couple of days ahead of us, and I hope people who are proponents for those particular bills that haven't been heard are willing to come up and explain their bills in detail and stand for questions, as other people have had to do with their bills. I'll save some of the rest of that stuff for Friday evening. Mr. Chair, I think you have a bill here that is unfortunately got some good stuff in it, but unlikely to get passed with the good or the bad stuff in it.
Thank you. Representative Barr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Evans.
Welcome back, Mr. Evans. Mr. Barr. Representative Barr.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Evans, who is the sole provider of funding into the RDA?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, representatives, the customers of Xcel Energy.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, if we could find a repository for your spent nuclear fuel, would you keep that on site for any length of time before you moved it out to a repository out of state, possibly?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think, you know, we are trying to do everything to move the fuel. There would be no reason to retain it once we have the ability to move it.
Representative Barr.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, and if you could, if we could find a repository and you moved this fuel, spent fuel out of the state, how much would that save Xcel ratepayers and how much would be left in the RDA at that time?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it depends on when that time comes. Prior to, if this bill were not to pass, then our customers' contribution to the RDA next year would be $32.5 million. In 2020, it would be $34 million because we would have put some more casks out. These are projections, but we think we're on the money here. 2021, another $34 million, 2022, $35.5 million, and it goes up. Between 2018 and 2030, which is as far as my spreadsheet that I'm holding goes, that would be $479 million that we will have paid into the RDA under current law.
Representative Barr.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, and if we could find a repository sometime before the licenses expire, sometimes say the next 5 years speculatively, at that time, how much money would be going into the RDA that Xcel ratepayers are paying into that?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we currently pay $500,000 per year on every cask at Prairie Island and $350,000 per year on every cask at Monticello. So every cask that moves is a savings of that amount of money. So, again, it would depend on when, how quickly, what year, whether it all moved at once, whether it moved in stages. So there would be, but that would be the order. It gives you some idea of the order of magnitude.
Representative Barr.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, so if all of the casks were moved out by 5 years from now, in year six, how much money would be going into the RDA?
Mr. Evans.
Zero.
Thank you. Representative Clark, you get the last question. If you could, Representative
Clark. Very brief for Mr. Evans, I think. Do you know if either of the two proposed repositories are in tribal lands or affiliated with tribal communities?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't, but I will get that information. I don't know. I don't believe they are, but I don't know.
All right, members, that completes our agenda for the day. I've been notified by staff that the bond language that's contained in the bill does not require a supermajority. It's only general obligation bonding. Second of all, reminder, amendment deadline of 2 p.m. tomorrow. With that, we are adjourned.